You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys are going plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast, coming to you after the Boston Celtics beat the Indiana Pacers 84-74.
Woo!
Boy, man. Playoff basketball. Celtics win game one of the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. They are one of few teams not to be upset in game one. And we're here to talk about it. I am John Corrales of MassLive.com, joined by Samuel Jamison Packard III.
Jam.
Also known as Ladies Love Cool Jam.
Jam.
Why? Why? Why can I not?
It's repetition. It's
what
funny.
Is it?
Don't forget that third name, Young Baby Jamwich.
Shout out to the Welsh's people who, out of nowhere, after I chalked it up and said, that's it, we're done. There's just no way that they're going to be involved in this. All of a sudden, they just started like liking your stuff on Twitter, like furiously.
So we're slowly working on them, but yeah.
We're going to wear those people down yet. Give us that money. All right, so a few things here to talk about before we get to your tweets and whatnot. So we have the tale of two halves, as the saying goes. And in the first half, let's start with this. How worried were you early on that, like, oh shit, they didn't learn anything from the regular season? These are just who these guys are, and like they were the same sloppy selves. They did all the same things wrong. They looked lazy. It just didn't look like that playoff Celtics that we were promised.
I wasn't super concerned because I felt like that first half was kind of there's just some crazy things going on. 10 turnovers. They were just like super sloppy with the basketball. Kyrie was only 3 of 10. I kind of have this expectation of Kyrie just being able to go off in the playoffs. They did give up a number of offensive rebounds, 6, I think, in the first half, which I was a little bit concerned about. But the thing that gives me confidence in the series and the reason why I wasn't worrying then and showed itself in the second half is that despite all those mistakes, they only were down 45-38. They're only down 7 because the Pacers, really without Oladipo, don't have a main option. I mean, they have Bojan Bogdanovic, who he's carrying the load for the entire kind of without Oladipo, but against the Celtics, at least the past couple games, has not been great. He only had 5.5. It's not like the Pacers were running away with it or really taking the reins of the game. So I wasn't too concerned. I thought they were going to put it together, but it was a rock fight. It was 48 minutes of a rock fight.
Yeah, it was. I also saw that at halftime. Like the first quarter, I was like, geez, man, this again, huh? But As you got into halftime and you saw the Celtics at the half, they were down 45-38. So you say 38 points at the halftime is just terrible. But you still, Kyrie, 3 of 10 in the first half. Al Horford, 1 of 5. Like, Al Horford looked uncharacteristically bad in the first half. And you thought that was just not going to stick around. Like, that was not going to be the case for the entire game. Like, they can't go a full 48 minutes against this team with Al Horford being that bad. Like, all of his passes were getting tipped. Everything, it just didn't seem to be going well for him. Luckily, they had Marcus Morris. So, story number one in this game is that Marcus Morris, who finished with 20 points, scored 15 of them in the first half, 12 of those in the first quarter.
He's back. Playoff Mook. November Mook, the same person.
50-40-90 Mook.
But he saved their asses because he was the only one who could make a shot. They got down early and brought them back, and he was just It was not just like he was making shots, and it was nice to see him, 2 of 5 from three, but he was getting to the line. Yeah. He was the only one really attacking the rim.
9 of the Celtics' 11 free throws in the first half.
But he's also just diving on the floor, like making hustle plays. I thought he was just brought a nice level of intensity. And it was interesting because going into the game and into the series in general, I thought like the Celtics would really try and do things with two bigs, Baines and Horford, kind of matching up against Turner and the world's most dangerous basketball player, Thad Young. But really, if you look at the numbers, like the Aaron Baines was not useful at all there in that first half, and like the Celtics lineups were much better when they kind of went smaller and had Marcus Morris at the four and had Hayward in the game. They were kind of bigger, better contributors than kind of that double big lineup. I'm not sure exactly why, but the Pacers were definitely. The Pacers just can't really do anything on offense, so I think the Celtics they were playing pretty intense defense no matter who was in the game, but just to get better shots, I feel like they just need more spacing, and so they kind of struggled to get that spacing with both Baines and Horford, and they just kind of mucking up the paint.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting early that I think Brad Stevens, I think the Celtics saw that, and I was expecting them to do a lot of high pick and roll with Kyrie and Al Horford, but what they were doing with Kyrie and Aaron Baines and having Horford in the corner as a spacer, which I get, but I don't like. And they got away from that. And like you said,
it kind of makes sense, though, if you think about like the personnel, because Miles Turner is led the league in blocks. I'm assuming he's going to be on Baines. Thad Young's the more mobile guy. You don't really want... Like, if Baines is in the corner, then you basically just have Miles Turner, great shot blocker, lurking in the paint, ready to help on Kyrie drives. I guess it makes sense.
Sure.
So that's why we're adding Mook to the game and making it so you can't... If Mook's in the corner, like, that's a guy you have to cling on, especially if he's making threes.
Right. But and it does make sense, but I don't like it because it takes away everything that Al Horford does well. And remarkably, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I don't think Al Horford is tremendously great shooting corner threes. I don't think his corner three number, he just doesn't shoot them very much. He's an above the break three guy. It's always a pick and pop or maybe trailing in transition, secondary break. He doesn't do a lot of corner threes. So it's not a place that he's used to. I don't think it's the most comfortable spot on the floor for him. And while I understand the concept of, well, he's a strong three-point shooter, you stick him in the corner, you're spacing things out, you have Baines now, who is mostly a role guy, who's not going to pop much, who is, he'll make passes, but is nowhere near the passer Al Horford is. You take away every bit of the Al Horford threat at the top. So it's interesting that they've gone to this two-big lineup, but they're going to have to figure out a little bit more how to work that offensively. I have to go back and look at the game, watch the game again to see what they might do. But I don't know. Maybe they get away from that too big lineup.
Maybe, maybe it's just posting up Al Horford. If we talk about like what worked in the third quarter, about like when they started actually scoring, it was Al Horford post up, really trying to get to the rim, or Jaylen Brown going to the rim, or just generally trying to get things moving towards the basket. And so that was a nice change in the offensive approach from first half to second.
I liked Horford in the post. I mean, that set the entire tone for the third quarter. You get him in the post, what is it, 2-3 times, spin move and one, like that got the crowd going. And then they showed Larry Bird, which we'll talk about later, I'm sure. But then the crowd really exploded. But that was how they started their run, was Al Horford in the post. I've been arguing, like, I always argue for more Al Horford in the post. But back to the first half, because they made some adjustments in the second half, but they're going to have to – I'm looking at how they start game two, and not to make this into a total preview of game two, but it's going to be interesting to see what they do starting game two. What did you think of Jaylen Brown starting?
I thought he did solid defense. I thought like he played the role of Marcus Smart, just trying to like drape himself on Bogdanovich. I thought he followed him around screens. Thought they just did a solid job on that. On the offensive end, I just don't. He didn't do much, and it kind of makes sense with he. That's not the role he's comfortable in. But I don't know. I thought he was. It was a solid performance, but it was good, not great.
Say hello to David Locke. He just chimed in.
Hey, David Locke.
How's it going, David? Hope you're enjoying the show. I didn't think Jalen was particularly great in the first half. I thought he missed a couple of assignments. I think he was a little slow. He was better in the second half. I think he had better energy in the second half. I think in the first half, I don't know. Kyrie likes to use the term feel out game, and maybe he was feeling things out. But I thought that he was a little slow, and kind of I felt like I would come out of this game thinking I'm going to remake my argument for starting Semi Ojeleye, because I just like Jalen Brown more off the bench. I just there are times
can Semi chase Bogdanovich around those screens?
I think so.
Does he have this leg? I don't know if he's fast enough. I know Shimmy's like strong, but it's just you have to be kind of pretty agile to like really just be running and chasing the entire game.
I think he can do it. He doesn't have to do it the whole game. I don't want 30 minutes of Semi Ojeleye. I want like 13 minutes of Semi Ojeleye, but just enough to keep Gordon Hayward and Jaylen Brown together. And today they subbed in Gordon and Mook, and Mook changed the energy of the first half. So, you know, half of my argument that I'm making for myself is going against the other half of the argument, which just goes to show it's very nuanced. Everything, you know, there's a lot to these games. I still think that there's value to that, but if Jaylen Brown's going to play like he did in the second half, then they can go ahead and do it again, and I think they'll be okay. But it's going to be interesting. I'm very curious to see what adjustments the Indiana Pacers make so they can start scoring a little bit more and freeing up Bogdanovich, who had, what, 12 points on 4 of 11 shooting, 0 of 3 from 3. I mean, that's minus 13. That's just 11 shots for Bogdanovich. It's just not going to get it done for the Pacers. You're not going to win anything if you're getting 12 points out of him. Two guys in double figures. Was it Corey Joseph with 14?
Corey Joseph was their leading scorer with 14 points.
That's insane.
Cujo.
I mean, they scored 74 points. So that was, you know, that's not great. So, all right, that's the first half discussion for the most part. Let's take a break. Why don't we come back? We'll talk about more of the second half and all the stuff that went great, and then we'll get to your tweets. So this is where we shut off the Instagram Live. So everybody who's listening or watching on the Instagram Live, if you're listening to this and you haven't done the Instagram Live, we're Locked On Celtics on Instagram. Check it out. We're, you know, we do this every once in a while, pop on the Instagram Live so you get like the first part of the podcast, and then you wait for the rest of it. But do that if you need to subscribe to the Locked On Celtics podcast. There's the new Himalaya podcast app. There's Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. I mean, anywhere podcasts exist, you can get in your car or use your smart device at home and ask it to play Locked On Celtics. Play podcast Locked On Celtics. Do that. We're coming right back with more in the Locked On Celtics podcast. The Celtics came out of halftime and laid the hammer down on the Pacers, outscoring them 26-8 in the third quarter. 8 points in the third quarter. I saw, well, first of all, Kyrie and Al Horford played better, like we said earlier. They had that run early. They continued that run, making shots. I mean, it comes down to you just make shots sometimes. And in the third quarter, the Celtics shot,
43%.
43%.
That's the thing. The Celtics still weren't
a weird box score.
Weren't anyway. Great in the third quarter offensively. It's just that the Pacers were
just horrible. They shot 20%.
Very, very bad. They did not make a field goal for the longest time. And they just were. It's like partly like because of their personnel, but I just think part of like the way their offense is designed, they also have the spacing issue with the two bigs, and they're not great. They don't feel with the great 3-point shooters, but if you look at the start of that third quarter, they had a turnover or turnover, and then I think they missed their next four possessions were just four missed threes, and they just immediately dug themselves in a hole. I thought nothing. There was no good looks for the Pacers. They took a lot of mid-range non-paint twos that we kind of blame the Celtics for taking a lot of. But at no point it was like, oh, they're going to... Yeah, they did miss a lot of shots more than you normally, but it wasn't like they were getting these great shots. It just felt like the Celtics were really connected defensively. They were forcing turnovers. Celtics, wow, I thought they had more blocks there, but maybe they had them in the fourth quarter. But it just, I don't know what the fix is for the Pacers. Now, like, I don't think, I'm not as boisterous in declaring that this series is over as I was last year after the Celtics won game one, just because, you know, the Celtics only scored 84 points, but I just don't know how the Pacers really, like, get going on offense.
It's funny. Last year you were very boisterous, and it was the Milwaukee series, right, with Giannis and Antetokounmpo. And this year... where it feels much more likely that the series is over, or it's going to be very difficult for Indiana to do anything here. You're much more muted.
But I feel like I've learned my lesson. Maybe. Who knows? Well, now you're just now you're just goading me.
Yes. Yeah.
But I think they got to get better games from their big men. Like Miles Turner had 1 point in that quarter. Sabonis had 1 point. Like they were basically just begging Sabonis to take. Elbow line jumpers or yeah. Turner, basically the entire team, they are dropping heavy on any pick and roll and just inviting those shots. And so I just imagine they're like, if their whole game is to trying to create these like interior passing with two bigs, I just think if the Pacers, you'd have to expect to come out and get better games from their big men. Because what, Sabonis finished with 7, Turner with 5, Thad Young with 7. Like this,
yeah,
just
that's bad.
We talked about Bogdan, but like someone else on the team other than Corey Joseph and Tyreek Evans are going to have to score points for them.
I think the Celtics adjustment there, like you talked about, the dropping, that was huge, because not only did it prevent those shots at the rim, but Brad Stevens talked about it after the game. Like one of the things they talked about at halftime was protecting the rim, and that's what they did. They just dared them to shoot, because in the first half they were doing all of the things, and it was so bothersome. All of the things that they knew the Pacers were going to do, they did. The Celtics let all of those things happen. They let pick and rolls get to the rim. They let layups and dunks happen. They let offensive rebounds and putbacks happen. All of it. And it felt like, this is why I was asking you the question. It just felt like, did you guys not learn anything? You just spent a week knowing that, and Brad after the game said that they knew it was coming and it still surprised them. And I love this line. This is not a series for the timid. But
it is not. It was a bloodbath out there.
Yeah, the Celtics knew that these guys were going to hammer them with their bigs. They knew it, and they still let it happen.
Well, I don't think they were they let it happen, but it's not like they were. Like we said, they didn't get murdered. Like they only scored 45 points. There was definitely possessions in which they were just like let them score too easily on the pick and roll. But still, the Pacers are not like that great of a shot making team that were consistently but like putting up offense. They didn't even score 50 points.
No, it's true. But the Celtics did still go into the half down. And granted, if they had made some shots, they might not have gone into the half down. But point is, the way the Pacers scored, the things that the Pacers were doing well in the first half, and the adjustment that they had to make, the frustrating part about that is that's the thing that they knew. It's not like they came out and Thad Young went nuts, or that they put in Doug McDermott and he just got hot. And you say, oh, geez, now we got to adjust to this thing. That's the thing that they knew. Now, and of course, they made a good adjustment. That's the good part. They made a good adjustment. They forced those guys to take those mid-range shots. And even if they started to make some of those shots, it wouldn't have – that's the shot you want to give up. And the Celtics, on the other hand, were making their shots. Let's see. In the second half, they shot 2 of 4 from 3. Really? In the entire second half, 2 of 4 from 3? I guess I shouldn't be surprised because they only scored 84 points.
That was the third quarter. In the second half, the Celtics were 6 of 11 from deep. Jason Tatum, sneaky – solid game, finishing with 15 points, making all 3 of his threes. He took one very ill-advised three that I thought he was going to get removed from the game for, but turns out they were just taking Kyrie out because they were up by 15 with a minute to go. But, yeah, the Celtics' shot-making was just that much better in the second half. I imagine the Pacers, like, what they finished shooting 33% from the field, 22% from three. I imagine that's going to get better. And so I imagine that they're going to score more points, but I imagine the Celtics are going to shoot better as well. So it's just... I don't know what the huge adjustments are, but I think that's why we tune in. And that's why we got two more days of podcast to talk about it before Wednesday night.
Yeah. I just to finish my point there, which I'm not even sure what point I was making, so I don't know why I'm going to finish that. But the Celtics, I don't know if that's going to be the thing that they just end up doing moving forward. Like they come out in the first half of the next game and dare – the Pacers to shoot, and as you know, role players in the playoffs on the road do not shoot well. So that could just be the strategy moving forward. You just sag and dare them to shoot, and you just let Jaylen Brown or whomever starts, let him be the guy that chases Bogdanovich around, and you limit him and say, all right, go for it.
All right, Darren Collison. All right, Wesley Matthews.
Yeah.
If you want to pull up from 18, by all means.
I mean, and you got to hope that – really what it boils down to, like we sit here and we do so much and we try to break everything down to such a minute little level. Really what it's going to boil down to is you try to shut down Bogdanovich, you dare these other guys to score, and they're not great scorers, and you just let Kyrie and Al, and you play off those guys, they do their thing, you play off of those guys, and you still have other guys who can score, Tatum, Brown, Hayward, Morris. Like one of those guys is going to get hot along with those other two. And there's your recipe for winning. It's very simple.
Yeah. Tonight it was Mook. I actually thought it was like going in that is this was going to be Hayward. I thought another interesting wrinkle about tonight was that Brad's rotations, he went with some in both the second quarter and the fourth quarter. It was, or maybe it was first and third. He took Al and Kyrie off the court and basically let it be Gordon time. And Gordon only finished with 10 points. But he took 12 shots, and he was pretty aggressive trying to draw fouls. It was not as successful tonight. He only ended up taking two free throws. But I just liked his approach generally, and I thought he did a good job. So it was lucky that Mook was the guy who kind of stepped up and scored 20 points. I imagine the general design is for Hayward to score 15 and Tatum to score 15. But I'd have thought Hayward was solid tonight in that kind of
– Hayward did a lot. I mean, he didn't shoot well. He was 4 of 12, but – he had how many rebounds? 7 rebounds. He had 4 assists.
2 steals.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of turnovers. He was 10 points plus 7. I mean, he was okay. I mean, he was okay. And he wasn't the guy that we saw, I think, over the past couple of weeks of the season. But I do think that there is a little bit of like this was his first playoff game in Boston. I think there might have been some of the moment here, because after the game, everybody was, you know, they say their thing, and Hayward, you could see, like, he was like, oh, yeah, man, that was fun. Like, I think this was one of those games where he just, I'm going to give him that got caught up in the moment kind of thing here, and then I think game two might be a little bit more kind of what we've been seeing. All right, well, we're going to talk about this for a long time here. This series is going to go for a while. When we come back, we're going to do tweets, junk drawer, general tomfoolery. So stick around for that here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We ask you to tweet us during games. Use the hashtag RaininJays, 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 so you might be included in this podcast, depending on how many we have, how long we go. So tweet us those, and we'll get to them here on the podcast, like this one, at Kalela underscore Sam. The fact that Mook has almost half the Celtics points so far is so incredibly on brand for this team.
It was fantastic.
It was so wild. Like, he comes in and I'm like, okay, here we go. Brace yourself. And then he just starts drilling. He hit the three. He hit that fadeaway in the lane. Then he gets fouled taking a three. You're like, oh, Flash Dad is back.
Well, that was the thing, is because it was an early afternoon game, so he wasn't even hung over yet. He was still drunk from the night before.
There it is. Petition to start all these games at one. At Prof Chop, Kyrie's locked in on defense. Always a good sign. Yeah, Kyrie, like, I feel like, I forget what it was, but a missed call or something like that. Kyrie was pissed off, and he ended up getting a steal.
Oh, when he was diving on the floor over there in that corner, yeah.
Yeah. This goes back to the beginning of the season when Kyrie was really trying on defense. He doesn't have to be Marcus Smart. He doesn't have to be Klay Thompson. He doesn't have to be a great defender. He just has to be a guy who defends with, to borrow from Brad Stevens, purpose and effort. You know, you got to just go out there and try and try to do the right things. You don't have to make every play, lock anybody down. Just try. Play with that purpose, and good things will happen. You get into passing lanes, guys make mistakes, and you take advantage of them. And in a playoff game, especially when, as you put it so nicely earlier, it's a rock fight, those turnovers, those live ball turnovers where you get into the passing lane, you can go out on a break, and it leads to a dunk or an and one or a foul. That is so important to turning games around or building leads. So that was very... very cool of Kyrie to be doing.
Way to try, Kyrie.
Way to go. Nice try. Way to try. At JoeAngus11, somebody must have given Al some CM and punched him in the face during halftime because he's fueled up and mad.
He came out big mad to start the half and then was flexing all over people after drawing that and one on Thad Young, who had four fouls. Foul trouble early. It felt like the Celtics did just a solid job of drawing fouls tonight, especially with the physical game. But yeah. Horford looked like a completely different player in the second half, and yeah. So that was welcomed sight because like, they needed that toughness.
I feel like maybe a baby kept them up too late last night or something, and he, I don't know. But yeah, can I just say as an aside, one of my favorite things for a player to do, not celebrate, not like do the flex or anything like that, just walk towards the crowd and look into the crowd.
Yeah.
Just that stare into the crowd, man, that's enough to fire people up. I like that. Very understated, but it's very, very cool. At Micah underscore Angelo, who, by the way, I met in Washington. Very cool dude.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was very nice. The C's are finally playing the Celtics brand of basketball. Yeah, that tough, like, this is what the Celtics are kind of all about. Like, just tough defense, go and then get out on the break or just work it into the post and get those buckets. So
we don't think of Brad Stevens as, like, you know, in like football, you think of like specific coaches are like the offensive guru or yeah. The defensive minded. We don't really talk about Brad as like kind of this defensive guy, but his, like, the Celtics under his tutelage, it's a fun word.
Tutelage.
Their defenses have been great, and they've been tough, and they've been, at least last year, best in the league. They topped some of the lineups that the Celtics had. They're best in the league. I think that's one of the things that makes him so good adjusting in playoff series is he switches up what he's doing to try to play great defense. And I think he's just more of a defensive-minded coach than we give him credit for, because in that third quarter, they put the clamps down. Like, yep. They were intense, creating a lot of turnovers, just getting to loose balls, and it was solid vintage rock fight Celtics basketball.
I like the old KG. That bar was a fight. Bar fight. Let's see. A few tweets here. One again from Micah, who says Tito three sticks at the buzzer at G Yab with the 3-point heave by Rozier. The hashtag SMD Celtics are officially back. And at Beard Jam, Terry Rozier is legit elite at hitting end of quarter heaves.
It's that really was true. It's kind of weird. It was a very ugly shot, but I don't know how it went in.
That was not a good shot. But I mean, it was an end of quarter. It was end of the quarter shot. So I mean, it wasn't going to be pretty.
But he was pumped and jacked that it went in.
He his reaction. I mean, he was reacting to like the foul that he thought he should have gotten, but also reacting to the excitement of it all. He must have jumped like 5 feet in the air. Like that was not only was the shot elite in the end, the reaction was maybe more elite. Like that was a fun moment.
And then he came out like to start the next quarter and was like, you could tell he was still just super pumped up because he was getting those rebounds where he skies to the like top of the backboard and looking like Daryl Strawberry out there. And he just like had four straight defensive rebounds in a row where it's just like he was going to get it, like stealing it from his teammates, like Westbrook S. It was fantastic.
It was nice. Let's see. At Rifesy, Kyrie honoring his fallen brother Marcus, playing great defense today. Not only that, after the game, he had an interview on court with TNT, I think, where he's basically like, this one's for you. That was a fun little moment there, and everybody misses Marcus. Like, Marcus is like the soul of this team, and not having him out there, I think if he was out there starting the first half, it would have been a much different type of game.
Or he would have gone 0-for-6 from 3.
I prefer my version of that.
You never know what you're going to get with Marcus. That's why it's fantastic.
And let's see. At Jovian Shadow, this is a very nice thing to wake up to on a Monday morning. He's in Australia. He's one of our Aussies.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know the time difference, but I'm sure the 1 o'clock start really messes that up for them.
Yeah. I feel like that's what? Like, got to be like 3 in the morning or so?
Like, yeah.
I think that's what it is. And Jake Isenberg, very excited to get on board with that. Jam Packard overreacting to game one, a game one win.
Here's the thing. I don't think the series is over, but it's Celtics in 5.
It's over.
It pretty much is.
I don't
is.
Think it's over, but it's basically over.
It's basically over, but I'm not ready to declare it over, but I would be shocked if this went longer than 5 games.
I said 5 before. I'm going to stick with 5. That's it for the tweets. Let's get to the junk.
All right, this is from Little Miss Sportsfy. Yeah, okay, so I had a Brad Stevens sex dream after that playoff match. Does that mean the rest of this playoff series will be erotic? Because game one sure wasn't, despite the win.
That was not an erotic game.
No, I don't think it's going to be a very erotic series. The Celtics had a few moments of ball movement that were quite nice. Didn't result in made shots, but the ball movement was there for maybe possession here or two. But yeah, no, it wasn't. I mean, I think the Pacers are like a pretty solid team and just like a gritty team. And so it's going to be hard to reach the levels of eroticism that we so desire. But who knows?
Winning is erotic.
That's true. Winning solves everything.
Yes.
From Josh Ua, JTLA or JTL Adams 423, when JB goes full smarf, we all win.
Mm-hmm.
I strong agree.
Second half was great.
From biggest Canes fan established 4-5-19, really wanted the Celtics to hold the Pacers under 25 points in the second half. Kind of feels like a loss.
Yeah, they started messing around there in the fourth quarter and just giving up a bunch of breakaway baskets that really didn't do the end of the game justice. They could have.
They were up by like it's the score is closer than it like it really was. They were up by like 18, and then they just kind of threw the ball around. And,
like it's weird to say. And it's sad from a Pacers perspective, but like 74 points, and that 74 points was padded. That's not good. This is not good.
Not great for the Pacers. This is from Andrew Moore, 1987 Time Lord victory cigar. It did happen. We got some playoff Time Lord. Didn't do much, but he was there, and I like that as a victory cigar. If you can just throw Rob Williams in the game, he didn't jump enough for my liking, personally. but it was nice to see him out there.
Sure.
Let's see.
How about me picking Semi Ojeleye to start the game, and he ends up with 28 garbage time seconds?
Well, yeah, it just didn't work out for you there. All right, I'm going to move on to my own junk drawer. Al Horford showed up looking like a snack, in a Miami Vice suit with his dad in tow. He looked pretty cool. Basically just like tan suit with a T-shirt underneath, probably some white loafers. I don't know. I couldn't see. It was a good sign that the night was going to go well.
Yeah, he was very Very well dressed.
Wes Matthews is wearing a bandana that normally I'm pro, but and it's kind of looks like Ryu from Street Fighter, but I've decidedly this was a Ken bandana, and it was just not as cool.
Ken was definitely not as cool.
The Celtics had so many violations in the first half, or not violations, turnovers, that they got a five-second violation. When's the last time you saw a five-second violation called in an NBA game?
I don't know that I've seen one this season. I can't remember one.
It's absolutely that's just how poorly the first half went. We got a performance from the JetBlue flight crew.
Yeah, what'd you
Lucky
think of
is
that?
Back. He was hatless. Report hatless. He's the only one who can finish on that team. The rest of the crew is not great at finishing around the rim.
No, I feel like they all finished. They had one. They had one alley-oop that went astray.
They had two, I think, missed dunks. But I thought they were generally back. Lucky is back, big time.
He is. It's great to see the leader out there. He's a very flippy guy. He can do many spins and flips in the air.
Cool moment of the night was when Larry Bird was here.
That was awesome.
Now, here's the thing. He works for the Indiana Pacers, but really his presence got the crowd going. There was a Larry chant.
Huge.
He stood up and waved to the crowd.
Does he still work for the Pacers?
I don't know.
He's no longer the team president, but I mean,
Or is he just a guy?
I think he's just a guy now.
Oh, well then never mind. That is just a cool thing. Like the shouts to the Celtics crowd. Like it's always just really cool in here in the playoffs, and they brought it tonight, but especially after that moment, like that was right in the middle of the Pacers not being able to score points at all, but it was probably the loudest it was for the entire game.
That was in the timeout after the Al Horford and one, and people were already starting to go a little bit nuts, and they did the show the crowd, show people dancing, and all of a sudden they showed Larry Bird, and people went nuts. It was awesome.
It was quite cool. I feel like they like had a whole bunch of new videos tonight. They totally changed up the in-game.
It's the playoffs, man.
It was the playoffs. But there was one video in between the third quarter and fourth quarter, which was just like trying to pump everyone up, but also just had a bunch of weird clips from movies.
Yeah,
and they like showed when there's something about Mary and it's Ben Stiller when he like pulls up his zipper. And I was like, what the hell does that got to do with basketball? Like, how is that at all related to what the mood you're trying to evoke right now? And then they had a bunch of other really obscure clips from '90s comedies. I didn't dislike it, but I was just more just confused.
I can confirm and I concur. It was confusing. I did not know what that was supposed to do.
Aaron Baines got hit in the penis, came out of the game, just screamed until the pain went away, and then returned. And it was just like, and then he denied ever being pain after the game. He was just like, no, the video can be deceiving.
Yeah, right. It was just the big Viking scream.
It's absolutely
hilarious.
But you saw there's clips of him on the bench, just like, it looked like he really was in pain. He could barely stand up. And then he just goes to the bench, screams, and then is back in the game 3 minutes later. It's like the ultimate Aaron Baines.
Aaron Baines, you know, I don't think Aaron Baines gets enough credit for how crazy he is. Like, and I don't know him particularly well. He's always nice when he's talking to the media, but like when he's not in a scrum, like when he walks into a scrum, good day, and that was horrible. Jeez, I'm sorry.
No, that was perfect.
And
Vegemite sandwich.
But he's always like nice and saying things.
I discovered a phrase the other day. Say the phrase "rise up lights."
Oh yeah, it's supposed to sound like razor.
Rise up lights.
Yeah.
Rise up lights. Rise up lights.
You're just gonna go. You're gonna go to Australia someday, and that's all you're gonna say.
I've been saying that to myself for like the past 4 days. It just makes me laugh every single time.
Oh, it's great. But
I got to figure out a way to tell Baines rise up lights.
But I have been around Aaron Baines at times where he is not in a particularly good mood. Or like once was in Brooklyn after they lost and we were in a scrum in the locker room. And the only place I could wedge in was in front of a cooler. And it was a cooler that he wanted to get into. And he's like, excuse me. I was like, what? Oh, sorry.
That's got to be terrifying.
I'm not a small guy. And I was like, oh, geez. I felt like, it was like, whoa, I should probably move out of the way. And then, like, the next game, literally the next game, I was in his way again. walking down towards the locker room, and he was walking much faster than I was, and he had caught up to me from behind and just like brushed past me. And he's a large person, and just to have that move past you, it's like being in a car on the highway and not thinking that anybody else is on the road with you, and all of a sudden a tractor trailer zooms by you really close. You're like, holy shit. Like, that's so.
Now imagine trying to go up and hit a layup and having that man jumping into you. Oh, my God. It's terrifying.
That's not something I ever want to do.
A couple more things than junk drawer. There was a sequence where Al Horford got a block, immediately got the ball, became point guard, was very, very patient, let the play develop, and dished it to Gordon Hayward for a nice kind of up and under reverse. And it made me deem Al Horford the Dominican god of fertility. And it just felt like the absolute perfect Al Horford play and the perfect name for him. So he is the Dominican god of fertility moving forward. And then finally, this just made me laugh. Classic Nate McMillan, a minute 36 left. The Pacers are down by 15. He calls a timeout. That's a classic Nate McMillan move. He loves the timeouts just to like to send a message late. Like, we're going to do the right thing. We're going to like figure right. this out. Classic stuff.
Sure. I mean, I guess I can see it. You don't want to get your guys into a habit of.
After that, they went on a 5-0 run. So
sure,
that
sure.
timeout worked.
Yeah, yeah.
Now this would be normally the part of the show where we would say a jam, which jam of the game, sponsored by some sort of juice company.
Yeah,
but no more free advertisement. No. If they're going to be. Jerking us around on the online.
You got to come with that money, baby. But if you had to pick a jam.
That's the other problem, is I can't really think of like a specific dunk that was
which
badass.
Jam would it be? Did they have Jaylen Brown, baseline drive.
Yep, start to the third quarter.
Yep, Jaylen Brown, baseline drive.
That qualifies as the witch jam, jamwich of the jamwich.
That would be the one. I was going to say Al Horford's in transition, but no, that was a cool one. Got by his defender, went baseline, rose up, two-hand dunk. That was sexy.
Anything else? Any other junk?
No.
Does it feel like the playoffs have started? It kind of like, because the Pacers are such a not formidable opponent, like, I didn't come into this building with like the playoff energy, with like the really the excitement. It was just kind of, I don't know what it is, because I was like very excited watching the 76ers lose. I was like fist pumping at Nets made threes. It was very cool to watch the Raptors lose, but for some reason I came into the game today and was just like, kind of just another game for the Celtics.
I feel like part of it is because the Celtics have played Indiana twice. And this just feels like part of the series. That's what Brad Stevens afterwards was like, this kind of feels like a game three.
Yeah.
It does. I think the other thing is, I don't think the Pacers media rolls deep. Like, I don't think
there's no like national excitement.
Yeah. It's not like this place has been crawling. Like, there was definitely a better energy than prior regular season games, but this also didn't have the same energy as when the Golden State Warriors came. And there's, normally when there's a playoff series, there's a star power, and the Pacers being, even with Oladipo, he's their star, and he's definitely a star, but he's not like, he doesn't carry that same gravitas, if you will.
Doesn't have the juice.
So, but when the Warriors were here, and people were just lining up for every Steph Curry warm-up play, and he was playing to the crowd, like
I
that
think
play,
the 1 p.m.
That,
start has a something to
that probably does too. You know, there's a little muted there after a Friday night or a Saturday night.
People need to be drunker, is what I'm trying to say.
Probably. Hey guys, you know, look, if this might happen again, nothing wrong with getting lubricated earlier in the day. Just day drinking is not like it's fine. It's fine.
It's actually better because then you go to bed earlier and you
sure,
like less
yeah.
time
you
to
sleep it off.
Over. Yeah,
you know, after the game you go home, you can take a nap, you wake up, whatever. Like, there's plenty of options. So, don't just
drink more. Is what we're trying to say. Wake up,
but
crack a cold one. Rise a blaze.
Okay, let's just end on that. reminder to everybody, if you are not a subscriber, if you're joining us for the first time, if you're maybe a Pacers fan trying to get the other side, you want to subscribe, get us right to your app. Maybe it's the new Himalaya podcast app, or if it's Google Play or Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, everywhere podcasts live, we live too. And you could always ask your smart device in your car to play podcast Locked On Celtics. All you regular subscribers, damn it, 5-star rating, please. Good review, please, and share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.